Hello, I'm Veronica, Scaresbrick Vatican Radio. Jesuit Michael Paul Gallagher went from being a lecturer in modern literature at University College Dublin to professor of fundamental theology at the Pontifical Gregorian University. I went round to interview him and began by asking him if he might describe himself as an imaginative theologian. Stay tuned. You are Michael Paul Gallagher, is that right? I hope I pronounced that right. And you were professor of literature, and now you are professor of fundamental theology. With a personal stretch of imagination, I might describe you then as an imaginative theologian?
Yes, I would. I hope that might be true sometimes, yes.
Is it a contradiction?
Oh, no, because theology mediates between culture and revelation or religion. And it's essentially a service of translation, of mediation, and you need a lot of imagination to do that. It isn't just repeating what was said in the past, it's translating it for the present.
I've been looking up about you, and you once wrote, "Theology needs to approach art and literature more as experience than as message or meaning." What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I mean that many theologians tend to read a novel or go to a play looking for a nice sentence for a sermon. And they'll find one, certainly. But that's not the point of literature. The point of literature is not the content, the moments of philosophical content in a novel, for instance. The point of it, or the real purpose of writing imaginatively, is a process. I would call it a rhetoric of the reader. In other words, rhetoric in the good sense, it shapes, it has an influence, it changes the consciousness of the reader. One of my favorite quotations in this matter, in fact, does come from a novel, so I'm disobeying my own rules, of D.H. Lawrence, where he says that the great power of the novel, properly handled, is to lead our sympathetic consciousness into new places and to lead it away from things gone dead. In other words, the process of reading is inviting us into new vision, new worlds, beyond our own self-experience. And that's much bigger than finding a nice sentence that I can quote in a sermon.
Words like imagination, wonder, are not words that one speaks about much these days. One tends to speak about faith and reason, but never about faith and imagination.
It's only half true, I would say. First of all, one always has to put a footnote to the word imagination, because in the back of many people's minds, there's our usual everyday use of the term. Oh, you're just imagining it, or it's mere imagination. And so as part of English, and not just English, there is that negative use, that it's just fantasy, it's something false. But in fact, in thinking of the last 30, 40, 50 years, imagination in a more creative and positive sense has come to the fore in many fields of thought. Einstein used to say imagination is much more important than knowledge because it leads us to new frontiers. My favorite quotation, if I can, comes from the poetess Emily Dickinson, where she says, "The possible's slow fuse is lit by the imagination." Now that's marvellous. It implies an explosion of insight. You're lighting a fuse, and then the fuse burns, and something happens, and it leads you to the possible. So in cold terms, the imagination is our faculty of new possibility, and many thinkers and philosophers, and indeed theologians, have been paying attention to it in that sense, because faith is the great new possibility of knowing about God.
Our present-day culture, which has moved away from the traditional setting, I suppose the kind of setting, the traditional setting that you and I probably grew up in, to today when there's a much more complex, call it whatever, technological input into our world, has lost that sense of wonder. How does wonder fit in with imagination?
Well, I like the key word wonder. I mean, that's a very ancient word. Even Aristotle and Plato more or less agreed that wonder is the beginning of all thinking, of all philosophy, of the journey of meaning and so on. And it's largely today a question of protecting the quality of our wonder. And so some of the major theologians, while they differed on all sorts of things among themselves, I'm thinking of Lonergan, a great man here at the Gregorian, a Canadian, or the famous Rahner from Germany, or Balthasar, they differed, as I say, on many things, but they strangely all agreed that theology needed to have a renewed, if you like, spiritual dimension that focused on a sense of beauty, a sense of liberation of affectivity, liberating us, as Lonergan would say, from the prefabricated world, that we're caught in a kind of a utilitarian, pragmatic consciousness. And the great power of art of all kinds, not just literature, is to invite us beyond the banal ordinary and onto this threshold of wonder, which of course can be the threshold of prayer.
Prayer is dialogue, no? Imagination can help us dialogue with God, no?
Yes, in our discussion at the Gregorian on these topics, I was asked a few questions. I accused, as it were, of ignoring St. Ignatius of Loyola, because the spiritual exercises certainly put a big emphasis on the help of imagination in making the gospel real, making a scene of the gospel, imagining it visually, even entering it and having conversation with the people involved and so on. And certainly Ignatius did that, and it was very central in his approach to getting people, to teaching people how to pray. My reply was that yes, but Ignatius needs to be updated. He has a lot to learn from people like Paul Ricoeur, the great philosopher, or William Lynch. He's a lot to learn also about the battle of imagination in our world today. Because we're caught between all sorts of absolutely banal, stupid, even I would call them sinful imagination in some of our advertising. What I've always liked to say is that if you're advertising something very posh and very expensive, you have to look absolutely bored and superior. Whereas if you're advertising an ice cream, you're allowed to smile. And it's this posh stuff, the image of this posh stuff, where it's a very posh set of shoes or a very posh watch that costs the earth. Here, we're surrounded by these images of false desire. And part of the battle is to liberate ourselves from the impact of all that and find, as Ignatius would say, true desire. So I would want to update Ignatius on the battleground of images. Something that lets you see through the deception, and that would be a theme in Ignatius in his famous meditation on the two standards, lets you see through the deceptions of some of the images around us and nourish ourselves with true images that set free our potential for life and love.
And you were listening there to Jesuit Michael Paul Gallagher, Professor of Fundamental Theology at the Pontifical Gregorian University here in Rome. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.